The 1995 Sunstone Symposium presents session number 353, a panel, Sunstone, The Next Generation, with Brian Cagle, Christopher Williams, Carrie Catherine Williams, Scott Warnick, and Brian Waterman.
And we've got a lot of important material to cover. My name is Brian Cagle, and I'll be your moderator this afternoon. Beside me, we have Sunstone, The Next Generation. Starting off the panel will be Chris Williams. He received his bachelor's degree in history from the University of Utah in architectural studies with a... Graduated from the University of Utah with a BA in history, and he's a convert to the church. He served a mission in the former Czechoslovakia. After him will be Carrie Catherine Williams, his wife. She graduated from the University of Utah with... a bachelor's degree in architectural studies with an emphasis in history and preservation. She says she spends most of her time when she's not serving on the board of the B.H. Roberts Society trying to weed her husband from his sexist tendencies. You can take that up with him after the panel. Following Carrie Catherine, we have Scott Warnick. He received his bachelor's degree in political science and philosophy from the University of Utah. He is the former president of the Low Benyon Community Service Center at the University of Utah campus, and he is currently working with Project 2000. And wrapping up the panel is Brian Waterman. He's a PhD student in American Studies at Boston University. He's a graduate from BYU, a former student review editor. He's Anna's father and Stephanie's husband. And I guess the only other really important thing you need to know about him is that the two of us are refugees from BYU. We left about the same time and went and got our hair weaves done together. So, with that said, we'll give you about 10 minutes, and hopefully we'll have time for questions and discussion.
Thanks, Brian. I get to be first today, and I wasn't really planning on that. And I'm sitting here looking at my wife's preparation and my preparation, and she's got everything clearly spelled out on the pieces of paper in front of her, and I have this little outline here, and usually it's the other way around, so this should be interesting. This is also the second time I've been sitting at this table at this year's symposium. We had a panel in this room just a couple of days ago, so I feel comfortable here, but not so comfortable with what's in front of me. We organized this panel so we could talk a little bit about the issues facing the generation that is going to eventually be taking over Sunstone and other independent Mormon forums. And we got together a couple of weeks ago and sat down and talked about the issues facing us. And I think the one thing we all agreed on is that we don't really have an issue, which is probably typical of our generation, the so-called Generation X. And when I say that, I don't mean that we don't have any issues, but we lack one galvanizing issue or a couple of galvanizing issues like generations before us had to bring them together and spur them on to get involved in things like Sunstone or in various organizations on college campuses across the country. I think the problem that we face, and I'm sure that this will be echoed today by other panelists, is that we presume many of the victories of the generations that have gone before us, from the victories of our grandparents in World War II to the victories of our parents in the battle for racial and gender equality and other important issues like that. So the task that we have before us is to identify the things that are going to be important to us and the things that we will be addressing through Sunstone, and whether or not we're going to continue using Sunstone the way it's been used for the last 20 or so years. One of the things that's important to me, one of the issues that's important, is speaking up for the Mormon middle ground. I think I'm typical of a lot of 20-somethings these days in that I reject labels like liberal and conservative, orthodox and progressive, and in a church setting, Iron Rodder and Liahona. I think perhaps out of necessity my generation has adopted a more pragmatic approach to a whole myriad of issues, and I've jotted down four issues here, or four areas that I think you can see a pragmatic approach coming from my generation. The first is politics. We're often called apathetic, but I think we're more than anything a little bit cynical. Like I said, we don't or at least many of us don't like labels like liberal and conservative, and I think I speak for many when I say I don't like labels like Republican and Democrat, because, frankly, I don't trust either one. And I think that that's something that you see a lot of among people my age, and really something that you see in American society in general a lot in this day and age. The other area I have identified here where we're pragmatic is in our education. I think there aren't many people today, maybe with the exception of someone like Brian Waterman down there, who get their education because they truly love learning. I think the attitude that prevails amongst my generation is education. Come on, just give me the degree. I need to get through college and get moving on with my life. And the way people in my generation approach school, I think, reflects that. I think that there's more emphasis on getting through classes and getting your grades and not so much on getting a good education. And that may be a real negative result of this more pragmatic approach to life. A third area I've identified here are relationships. I know that at least three of us on this panel here are the products of divorces. And I think that as this generation moves into the forefront in settings like this, you're going to see a lot more people who are the products of divorced parents. And that has really changed the way we approach our personal relationships. And it is something that I think we're well equipped to address in settings like this. And finally, the fourth issue, Mormon issues. And I think that in recent years, as there's been a lot of controversy with Sunstone and with other independent Mormon settings, you're going to see that our generation may take a different approach than the generation that has gone before us. I think the attitude that we have is let's change our circle of friends, or let's change our ward, and let's not worry about the institutional church. That's a battle that we're not ready to fight, and which I think many of us think we can't win. We would prefer, at least I would prefer, to focus on my immediate circle and try to influence lives right around me. Another issue that I think is important, and it's an issue that my generation is going to have to face, is what to do with the next generation of church members. We live in a church, or we're members of a church that is growing rapidly, although after listening to David Knowlton this morning on the radio, I guess maybe it's not growing quite as rapidly as I am. Because of growth in the church and international growth and cultural issues, I think, are going to be very important to my generation. My generation, and perhaps those a little bit older than us, many of us who are men anyway, have served missions, and it's become kind of the expected thing for Mormon men to do. And I think that gives us a perspective that older generations haven't had, because many of us have gone abroad and have had to deal with Americanism and Mormonism and how to work through that with new members of the church. I also think one of the most important issues that will face us dealing directly with this question of what to do with the next generation of church members is how do we create a stimulating environment that allows for the growth and development of converts, but at the same time is something that's satisfying to those who've been members of the church all their life, or to those who are looking for real, I don't know, food at sacrament meeting or in their other church settings. So I've presented a lot of issues and a lot of questions, and I'll be the first to admit I don't really have very many answers. I do think that the role of Sunstone is going to be important, but how we use Sunstone is something that I don't think any of us really know yet. The format of Sunstone, the symposium and the magazine, those are the product of a crusading generation, a generation that set out to right a lot of wrongs and change the world in which we live. And I think that our approach will be different, and we may find that we'll need to find another format or adapt the current format to fit our generation's needs and concerns. And one last thing I want to address. I think that another problem that we're going to have with Sunstone and using the Sunstone format is many Mormons my generation are quite intimidated by the label independent. And I think the church the institutional church has gained a victory in trying to marginalize Sunstone, because they've pushed many of the moderate voices out by scaring them away, basically. And I think one of the challenges the next generation of Sunstoners has is how to attract those mainstream Mormons and the young Mormons who have been alienated by the radicalization of Sunstone, or I don't know if really that's the best way of describing it, but the pushing away of moderate Mormons who would otherwise feel comfortable in independent Mormon settings. And that's really about all I have to say.
Well, I guess I get to be the woman on the panel today. I make only two promises with my little speech. The first is that I presume only to speak for myself and not for any other younger women in the church or in Sunstone. I'm often offended when people presume to speak for me, so. My second is that I promise I will not quote from the movie Reality Bites. I echo in saying that many of the battles and issues of the generation before us have been won, or at least settled. I went into college with the assumption that I could major in anything I wanted to, that I could be anything I wanted to, and that the only thing holding me back was my own motivation. I entered my marriage about 6 weeks ago, believing that I could certainly keep working if I wanted to. I could choose to keep my name or not. I could choose whether or not to have children. I could choose whether or not to make dinner. And I have also always assumed that I would be treated equally in almost every sphere of my life, with the possible exception of the church, which I'll get to in a minute. My mother's generation fought so that I would be able to operate under these assumptions. But where does my generation go from here is the question. My husband has described our generation as pragmatic. I heard it described in a movie last night that wasn't Reality Bites as weak, timid, and selfish. I hope that that's not true, but I saw it in college in students who were unwilling to disagree with an instructor and just went along with the flow simply to get the grade. And I see it around me a lot in Relief Society and Sunday School. So what are the women's issues in the world today? A striking example has come up in the last few weeks with the affirmative action battle in California. Do we need to be the token female in order to get our voices heard? Obviously, in General Conference, that's pretty much true. But in the world in general, I think that women can make it on their own, and they don't need to have special consideration because of their gender. Just like they didn't need to be put down because of their gender before the 60s, they don't need to be hired because of their gender now in the 90s. Other issues facing women today include getting men more involved in, quote, women's territory, the raising of children, the keeping of the house, and other such domestic tasks have always been women's territory, and although that's changing today and many more women are going to work, many more men are not staying home. I think that it's sad when I see in families a situation where the father would really like to stay home with his children and the mother would much rather go out and work, but because they feel trapped by this traditional gender roles, they're unable to do that and both remain unhappy. There's a family in my own extended family where the situation with the father staying home and the mother going to work works very well, and I'm sad to see that hasn't become a more common thing. There are, of course, many other issues which I don't have the time to get into, but I'll move on to issues within the church. What do we younger women need and want from the church? I will state that I am speaking from a pretty conservative Mormon point of view. I don't want the priesthood. I don't think that that's the issue anymore. I think that the issue now is to gain power and decision-making ability without having the priesthood. We need to show that women can have responsibility. There are so many bishops, stake presidents, and other priesthood leaders who assume that because they have the priesthood, they can run even the women's spheres of the church, that they can choose Relief Society counselors for the Relief Society president, that they can choose the primary teachers and the people that these women will be working with without giving them a voice. I mentioned that one woman speaking in a two-day session of General Conference is hardly representative of over 50% of the membership of the church, and I think that this needs to be addressed as well. Another problem I think I see arising, and I'm sorry that I didn't get a chance to go to the Relief Society panel the other day because I was in here listening to my husband being a convert, but I think there are some issues to be raised with Relief Society and the structure that it is today. Division by age, I think, might be something that would be beneficial to members of the church. We have elders' quorums and high priest quorums, but we don't have any sort of... We lump all the women together from 18 on in Relief Society. And I, for one, get kind of tired of going to Relief Society lessons and hearing how to make my home more accessible to my grandchildren. I haven't even gotten any children yet, and I don't think that's really applicable to me yet. But we don't need to have the priesthood to do all these things, and we don't need to have the priesthood to influence the decisions of those who do. Other issues facing the women in the church strike a more personal note, I think. Because we've gained the freedom to have our careers and to have our lives outside the home, we need to make more difficult choices about when is the appropriate time to leave your children and those kinds of things. Because I don't have any children yet, I haven't faced really any of these, but I know that women who are only a little older than I am are now getting into that, and those are important things. How does Sunstone play into this? Well, I sit on this panel as truly a member of the next generation of Sunstone, probably the only one with the exception of Brian Cagle. I probably attended my first symposium in the 70s when I was 5. I was probably coloring in the back and not really paying attention, but I always wondered why we needed to have Sunstone and the Ensign in our home at once, because weren't they just both church magazines? I mean, I didn't really get it. My aunt is Peggy Fletcher Stack, whom you all know. My parents, Catherine and Robert Fowles, and my grandparents, Bob and Rosemary Fletcher, have all participated in symposia since the beginning. And I really thought Sunstone was sort of, you know, just a basic mainstream magazine until I was in high school. And I really attended my first symposium as someone who thought about it the summer after my first and only year at BYU. Before I went to BYU, I didn't appreciate the need for such a voice as Sunstone's. I had been surrounded by my family, whom you've already heard about, is a pretty alternative voice in the church. And up to that point, I didn't realize that there needed to be a place for the expression of ideas like mine. But I think that Sunstone is a good place for that, and I think that it's also a good place for young women who are my age, who are married or unmarried or pursuing all kinds of things, can come together and realize that they aren't alone. I think the biggest problem with members of our generation is that they often feel alone. I think that the biggest thing that needs to be changed is not the institution, but a lot of attitudes. I think that the attitude that if you're 23 and you've been on a mission and you're not married, you're a bad person has to be changed. I think that the attitude that if you're 23 and you haven't been on a mission and you don't have a boyfriend or aren't engaged, then you're a bad person. I don't think that that women who want to maintain their own identity should be challenged. Where does Sunstone fit in with my generation? Brian Cagle, as managing editor, already gives us a voice in the Sunstone Forum. At the risk of embarrassing him, I want to say that he's truly conscious of the needs of someone like me and my husband and is trying to respond to those needs. He's very conscious of trying to involve us more. And we've talked a lot about maybe a splinter group of something new for the younger members. What specifically does Sunstone provide? It can be a place, like I said, where women like me can voice their opinions about the issues that I've raised. The new generation of feminists needs a way to be heard, and they also need a way to be distinguished from perhaps the more radical feminists of the past. This is the beginning of a new generation of Sunstone, which has different issues and different concerns. I'm sure that I'm now betraying my generation of pragmatists by being a bit idealistic, but nonetheless, I believe that our generation, as it becomes more vocal, can grow in power and influence and can further the cause of Sunstone into the 21st century.
A couple years ago at the Sunstone Symposium, I had a conversation with Jack Newell, who I think many people probably know here. I believe he was the former editor of Dialogue magazine and also a professor at the University of Utah. And I know he also participated quite a few times in the Sunstone Symposium. But we were talking and having a conversation about the lack of young people that seemed that the lack of young people involved in Sunstone. And he expressed some surprise and concern at this. Surprise because he said that originally Sunstone was a magazine for young people, it seemed, that a lot of young 20-somethings were involved in Sunstone. And in fact, Dialogue was almost the publication for the older generation, and Sunstone was for the younger, but that seemed to have been changing. He also felt, said he was concerned because he wondered what that meant, that there were far fewer young people involved. And he thought that perhaps what could be happening is that these young people who don't feel particularly comfortable in the mainstream Mormon culture may just be falling away altogether and are not interested. And he thought that was cause for great alarm. In this conversation, though, we didn't really get into the whys. Why was this happening? Why are there fewer young people now than I guess there were originally? But I've thought a lot about it since then, and I just wanted to share my ideas on that question. I'm going to have to be very brief, of course, and also I'm going to have to use some generalizations, and I don't like doing that. And I know there will be many, many exceptions to what I have to say, but just for simplicity, I'll resort to some generalizations about our generation. And also, these are experiences that are just simply based on my own personal reflections and my experiences with others my age. The first reason I think maybe a lot of young people are not involved is because they don't know anything about it. I don't think they know what Sunstone is. When I was growing up, unlike Carrie, I thought Sunstone was anti-Mormon. I don't know where I got that idea, but for some reason, I just equated Sunstone with this anti-Mormon group that was in Utah. I saw some things, and I must have picked some things up from the popular media. I don't know. But I grew up in Salt Lake in a fairly typical Mormon family, and so I never had, I just went through the motions. I never really thought much about religion anyway. And I went on a mission, and that's the first time I really had to reconcile my personal beliefs to the church and Mormon culture. And what disturbed me is that they didn't seem to match really well. And I made the big mistake of telling a lot of missionaries about this and how I thought that some things we were teaching may not be true. And so I was quickly labeled a radical liberal in my mission. In fact, a lot of people thought that I was on my mission in 1988, and a lot of people thought I'd be the only missionary supporting Dukakis. That wasn't true. I supported George Bush. I mean, it was scary enough to have this religious change. My political change had to wait till the second year of my mission. But anyway, because of good companions and supportive friends and a supportive family, I was able to make it through my mission, even though I did start thinking, I wonder if I'm really Mormon, because I had a lot of concerns, and I didn't know anyone that thought the way I didn't. I wasn't aware of anyone that thought the way I did. But when I got home, I was fortunate. I had friends whose parents subscribed to Sunstone, and I started looking at it, and I started reading it, and it was an incredible relief to see that there were people that thought like I did, that also were able to reconcile themselves to the Mormon church and still consider themselves Mormon and still be faithful, and not in spite of these differences, but almost because of these differences. They were able to develop strong testimonies, and that was incredibly comforting for me, and it was also very helpful in order for me to reconcile myself to the church. And I have a feeling there are probably a lot of people out there, whether they have this kind of experience on their mission or not, I think a lot of people will face this point of crisis. And I think that if they are not aware of Sunstone or aware of any kind of alternative community that thinks like they do, they may leave the church altogether. Because I think I would. In fact, I have to credit Sunstone for one of the main reasons I think I'm still in the church today. But even with this knowledge, I think that there's more that's necessary. And I think another reason why young people may not be involved is I think that we really want a sense of community. We want... Reading about people that think like we do is it's liberating to some extent, but I think one of the problems is we also want to participate in a community, participate in a dialogue, have people react to our beliefs, have people and be able to respond to other people. And I don't think there are very many opportunities for that in Sunstone that I'm aware of, and there may be, but I just am not aware of them. And of course, Of course, it can't really happen at church very often. I think there are some exceptions to this of some very progressive churches, wards, but I think a lot of times people don't feel comfortable engaging in a kind of progressive dialogue in church. I was fortunate because I had friends that were very open-minded, and we formed a study group, and we were able to talk about our spiritual lives, and they were very accepting of my ideas, and we had a great time. But I was just lucky to have that opportunity, and again, I don't think that opportunity exists for many people. I think it would be great if we could create more of an intimate community where young people really could talk about the things that they're interested in, because I think it's crucial for our personal development to be able to have that kind of a nurturing, intimate community. Another thing, reason that I think that young people may not be involved may be a difference, a generational difference in the way we approach our spiritual lives and the way we react to the mainstream church. It seems to me, and again, I could be wrong on this, but I just get the impression a lot of times from reading Sunstone and coming to a lot of the forums that we are not stuck, but it seems like we adopt an adversarial conversation. And I think that this is pretty typical of American culture. I think a lot of times we put things in either-or dynamics. And I think that takes place here, too. For example, women in the priesthood, a lot of times it seems like either women have the option of being in the priesthood as we understand it completely or are subservient. And a lot of times I think a middle ground is lost there. And I think that people in my generation resist this adversarial approach. I think we're more interested in a collaborative dialogue. As Chris said, we are a generation that a lot of us grew up with divorce in our homes. And I think the way divorce even is set up is the children of divorce a lot of times are pressured to take sides with parents. There's an attempt, I think, for each parent to justify their position, and children sometimes, I think, feel the squeeze of this and feel like they need to take sides, but they don't feel comfortable in doing that because it doesn't correspond to their experience or their reality. I think a lot of times we love and respect both parents in different ways, and it's really hard to take sides. And I think that is one example of, or maybe one reason why we are pragmatic. We are more interested in common ground. We resist labels, as Chris said. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're uncomfortable with the political environment today that also, I think, is adversarial-based. And I heard a great comment one time from someone that said that it seems like today in our culture we see disagreements as battles to be won instead of problems to be solved. And I think ours is a generation that's more interested in solving problems, getting beyond the labels, getting beyond the adversarial process, and really working together to solve problems. And I think that's the kind of dialogue at least I would like to see happen, is more of a real dialogue instead of maybe a perceived dialogue between us and them, a dialogue with all participants involved. And it does not seem to happen on a large level. I think this is something that needs to happen at a more localized level. But I've had some experiences like that have been incredible. When I was at the University of Utah in student government, we were trying to get a diversity requirement passed, which would require all students within their liberal education to take one course that emphasized diversity within our culture. And I was in charge of the student lobbying and trying to generate student support for this proposal. And from informal conversations, I knew there was a lot of people in LDSSA that were uncomfortable with this. And I think one of the reasons that they told me is because homosexuality was one of those issues that would be discussed. Not that it would be required to take a course on homosexuality, but that was one of the possibilities for satisfying the diversity requirement. So I met with the council at LDSSA, and it was a great conversation we had. They were very respectful of me and of the position I was coming from, and we had a great discussion, and I think a lot of common ground was found. I had a similar experience when I was in the Benyon Center when we were discussing what was going to be the issue of focus for Community Service Action Week. And one of the suggestions is that we would do it on the issue of AIDS. And one of the members of one of the student leaders in the Benyon Center who was LDS said, I don't think we should do that because the LDS students won't participate if we do it on AIDS. And this concerned me. Because I was an LDS student, and I felt comfortable in participating in those projects. And we talked about it. We sat down, and we talked about that. I talked about what I heard the prophet say in Ezra Taft Benson in 1990 in the Priesthood Conference about how we need to love and support and serve those with AIDS. And we had a great conversation. I think we found a lot of common ground. And I think we both came out feeling a lot better and a lot more enlightened on the issue. In fact, Chris and I had this experience when we were interns back in D.C. talking to some friends that were the typical iron rotters in the most extreme sense. But we had great conversations, I think, again, where we came out feeling really good. And I think these are the kinds of dialogues we want to engage in, not this adversarial process, but engaging with people, not just talking amongst ourselves, but going out to the broader church community and try to gain a better understanding of them and help them to try to understand us more as well. And the last reason why I think young people may not be as involved in Sunstone, is because I think we want to take action. And again, this goes back to the pragmatics side of our generation and the fact that we want to solve problems. I think we really want to take action. In this study group I mentioned earlier, one time we had a conversation about the role of women in the church. And afterwards, one of the women said, okay, what do we do now? And that question was very strange at first. You just talk about this stuff. We don't have to do anything about it. And she fully expected not only an answer, but that we follow through. And the most incredible discussion resulted, where we really started identifying what we could do to make some steps to try to improve the condition for women in the church. And it was great. And I think that, and I also learned that through the Bennion Center. It was almost an unwritten law in the Bennion Center. You could not have a conversation talking about social problems without someone at the end asking, okay, well, what do we do now? And I think that's a question that's missing all too often. What do we do? Now that we've talked about these issues, what do we do? What can we go out and do? I'm not as clear on the answer to that, but I think that there, if we really thought about it and we talked about it, we could identify some specific actions we could take to get involved and move beyond just discussing these issues and actually doing them. Maybe having service projects where we can really practice our religion. Maybe building relationships with people that would at first not be interested in discussing things with Sunstoners or something like that. I think there are a lot of opportunities there if we can just talk about it. So in short, I'm hopeful. I realize that there are fewer young people. Well, I guess that's the case, that there are a lot fewer people of our generation that are involved in Sunstone, but I'm hopeful because I think that there are definitely ways we can involve them by helping people recognize that Sunstone exists, that people like us exist, having some intimate community so people can gather and we can talk to each other, having collaborative discussions so we're not entering into an adversarial process, and taking action and finding ways to take action. I think if we do that, we can really involve a lot more young people and grow spiritually as well.
I have to ask before I say anything, does anyone out there have a couple Advil I could borrow? I am being honest. Thanks, Cindy. I probably should ask for Prozac since this is a thing about... Yeah. Oh, that's fine. That's great. Thanks. It's been kind of an emotional couple of days for me because I've been gone the last year from this. I haven't been immersed every day. I've been on email every day with people from Utah, but it's not really the same as I feel almost kind of bombarded to come back and have to kind of face all of this head on again. I think maybe I was enjoying a little bit of being away from it, which that might figure into some of the things I have to say. And I also have to say that I think that we'll also realize by the end of this discussion that there's a lot of diversity on this panel. And it may be just the difference between the University of Utah and BYU, because I think those of us at BYU are radicalized. I mean... I don't think we could get through that experience without really having suffered some major blows that maybe pushed us a little bit more to the edge or to the fringes. And I'm being really quite serious about that. When I started thinking about what I was going to say on this panel, I talked to friends on a couple different email lists I subscribe to, one of which is an email list for alumni of the Student Review, which is an independent student magazine at BYU, which is just now entering its 10th year. And I wanted to see what a lot of them had to say. Actually, I thought a lot about the people who are on this list. There are people who 10 years ago, someone might have predicted that they would become the leaders of the next Sunstone generation. And instead, there's a high percentage of people on the list who have no contact with the institutional church. A lot of people on the list who have no interest in being associated with liberal Mormonism. These are people who won the David O. McKay essay contest 6 years in a row. And they're people who easily could have become Eugene England or Laurel Ulrich from our generation, and instead they're not. That's not where their experience took them. And I think some of the things that our generation faces might explain why these people aren't part of the discussions we're having. And there's a couple other reasons that a lot of them aren't active too, and I think I'll get to that a little bit later. A panel talking about the next generation of Sunstone necessarily begs a question between our generation and those before us. The first generation of Sunstone were young graduate students. They were a little bit younger than the half generation before them who started dialogue when they were young graduate students, for many of them. I think that there are some significant differences, even other than some of the things that panelists have already talked about. But I think there are also some similarities. I think for the most part, a lot of people who are my age didn't grow up with parents like some of the panelists have had. I think a lot of us have had to face the same types of coming out process or something in regards to liberal Mormonism with very rude awakenings. And I think my experience is a lot more like Scott's, where I was on my mission and realized that I just, there were a lot of things that were going on and things that I read and that just didn't settle with me for whatever reason. And I actually found Sunstone on my mission. I had really terrific ward members in some liberal wards in New Jersey, in Princeton. I also spent almost every one of my P days, I think except for two in 6 or 7 months, in the library at Princeton reading the entire print run of Dialogue. And they didn't have Sunstone bound, or I would have been reading that too. I borrowed Sunstone from ward members. And really trying to come to terms with my religious background, with my beliefs, with my belief in God, with all kinds of things. But most of all, with just a lot of things that happened in the church that really disturbed me that I'd never thought of before. And I think that situation is probably the same for someone like Eugene England, who tells a story of sitting in Lowell Binion's class and the subject comes up of blacks in the priesthood, and he's more than willing at that part to defend the party line, but is forced to reconsider his beliefs because of something that Lowell says. So we're, at least in my experience, that is kind of, as we go through our education and we're exposed to the pluralism that exists in the world, we experience the alienation that is just part of modern consciousness. We're forced to realize that instead of saying, wow, our church has 9 million members, you say, there's only 9 million Mormons and half of them are inactive. And that's a teeny, teeny little part of the world. I think that's a similar experience that Sam Taylor had in the 1930s when he read Bernard DeVoto and thought, gee, oh my gosh, all my life I thought the Provo Valley was the whole world. You know, it's not at all. And so those kind of awakenings are really the same from generation to generation, I think. And there are differences that I see. Our generation, at least those of us who are being trained in social science and humanities, have different ways of viewing the world than the generation before us did. We're given critical tools that necessarily may lead us into a little more relativistic point of view. We talk about things in terms of being socially constructed or linguistically constructed, and that we're trapped in our language and we really can't get beyond that. And those kind of things can call us to have a kind of faith. They can make us realize that we don't have direct access to. I mean, I have never had a first vision. Have any of you? And even if I did, I would have to talk about it, and that would mean that it was messed up, and I couldn't really explain to you exactly what had happened to you. And I think that those kind of issues make a lot of people in our generation. You have different ways you can respond to it. One way to respond to it is to say, well, obviously general authorities don't have meetings with Jesus every Thursday where they share a bowl of popcorn and ask about, you know, really important questions. And so do I then just leave the church and bail out, or do I try to work out my differences of opinion with the church? And I don't know a lot of people my age, and maybe it's just the circles I run with, who really feel like they have direct access to absolute truth. And most of us think that's a pretty good thing. That way we can't be Hitler. Another way that we start to think about this, at least for a lot of my friends, is that we start thinking about our religious background in terms of a culture and a language that we receive, that even if we wanted to, even if we tried to abandon it, and we really couldn't, because it's the language that we received. It might sound a little deterministic, but Mormonism is written onto my body and my flesh the same way someone has a nipple pierced or a tattoo put on their body. It's not something that I can shake. Even if I didn't go to church for the years, I couldn't shake it, because that not going to church was just in response to what I had been given. And that's not necessarily a depressing thing either. It can be a liberating thing. Joanna Brooks talked this morning about taking what we've received and shaping it to our own needs, and being able to create cultural resistance out of the symbols we received as Mormons. By the way, I think you should probably buy Joanna's tape if you want to hear a really great expression of opinion and of perspective from someone who's in our generation. The talk was called Danites, Donut Holes, and Mao, and she was talking about cultural resistance in the next generation of liberal Mormons, or if we even want to use that term. Another difference between us and people who started Dialogue, and maybe even people who started Sunstone, is that we have a very different church than those people had. We don't have David O. McKay. We don't have Hugh B. Brown. We don't have... our moderate people can't express their own opinion. They can't come to BYU and argue with the guy who was there the last week who said something really out of control. They don't work that way. No one called Levina at home and asked her if she wanted them to come and testify on her behalf at her excommunication hearing. That's a very different church. The only access we have to a church like that is through anecdotes told by Sterling McMurrin. That's not something that we've ever known. In his late 20s, Eugene England, as an editor for Dialogue, was having meetings with general authorities at least twice a year to have friendly discussions about where the journal was going to go. And I didn't even attend my first Sunstone Symposium until after the statement on symposia told me that I shouldn't, which is probably why I went. But it is a really different church. And part of what that different church has done is that it's made this community, which has really been my experience when I came to 3 years ago. And I've been to a million since, not just three. I've been all over the country while I was working for the magazine. My experience was that I came and I really found a community that could support me and help me, and that there were Mormons like me out there. It was a revelation, even more of a revelation than reading the magazine was. It's really something when you come and see a room full of this many people and you think, you know, my, you know, goddess in heaven, there's people out there who are like me. sorry. It's true, though. In my early 20s, not even my late 20s, in my early 20s, I already had a file with the Committee to Strengthen the Members. I was under surveillance. I had a stake president who was directed by the area president call me in every 6 months. I'd been married 3 weeks when they called us if we were part of a Mother in Heaven cult. It was... That's a very different thing. I think a lot of people in my generation see people who receive beatings or have received beatings themselves and decide that it's not worth it. And I think that's sad, but I can also sympathize. I felt that way before, and sometimes I feel that way now. I think that some people in our generation, I'm not sure I agree with the split we're talking about between pragmaticism and idealism, because I grew up, I was finishing high school on the 20th anniversary of 1968, and they had Sgt. Pepper and the White Album, and we had U2's The Joshua Tree, and we were pretty socially idealistic, I think. I watched documentaries about, you know, storming Berkeley and had visions of storming my high school office and holding the principals, you know, hostage until they told us that we could wear shorts to school. Because my high school in Snowflake, Arizona had the BYU dress code adopted word for word. But I think that we have been idealistic. I think those of us who are at BYU, who were radicalized by the things that happened to us there, I think we are an idealistic activist going to protest Operation Rescue, or it's not just in Mormonism. Before Cecilia Farr and David Knowlton were fired, we all talked about what we were going to do when that day came, because there really wasn't much of a question in most of our minds. We said, well, what will we do? And Joanna said, let's have a sit-in in the administration building, where he said, well, let's chain ourselves to the Brigham Young statue and, you know, starve ourselves. Those are pretty idealistic stances. And I think that a lot of times that they can lead us to be disillusioned that much quicker, and that's why a lot of my friends aren't here. And a lot of them don't want to be either. A lot of them see liberal Mormonism as complacent and self-serving, as coming together as a bunch of privileged white people to talk about things that really aren't that important. I keep turning to Joanna. Possibly it's because I would rather have her be on this panel than me, because she's much more articulate. But Joanna talked about she actually the other day she kind of apologized for this, but she talked about at a California symposium about as a young feminist wanting to have worldwide activism and not just a local feminist activism. And while she expressed much respect and support for other generations of Mormon feminists, she said that in her mind, she wasn't after white roses, white roses, white ribbons, and white conferences. There's a lot of people out there in the world that need our help. And sometimes if all we do is come together once a year and talk about, you know, how mad we got last General Conference, then that may not be the best thing that we can do with our anger and our energy. And so I think a lot of us do have that kind of idealism. And Joanna said this morning that a lot of people are just being attracted to the secular left, and they do just put their energy in to those causes. I have issues. I have issues that are important to me. I don't think we can assume that victories have been won. I might agree that the best way to solve problems for women in the church isn't to give them the priesthood, but that's probably because I think that a wedding of hierarchy and priesthood ordination is just kind of a scary thing in itself. Maybe we need to do away with that kind of ordination and just have a priesthood of believers, and then involve everyone of all genders and races and classes in decision-making practices for the church. That sounds better to me. I hope I'm not sounding cynical. I hope that we can have a conversation after this, because there are a lot of people in this room who are in the age group we're talking about, and I hope that they are able to speak for themselves, because they probably have different opinions than any of us have expressed. I think that people like me, who may be just me and probably is just me, but at least the friends that I talk to with dozens of conversations to find out what they thought about the next generation of Sunstone. We feel like we have a double task ahead of us. We have to still find a place for ourselves in the church if that's what we choose to do. We have to find ways that we can participate. For me, the way that I can participate is I live in Boston now, and I have the choice of going to a ward in Cambridge where I could probably go up and bear my testimony and include Heavenly Mother, and no one would say anything. That's one option. I could do that, and that's appealing for certain reasons. But I choose to go to a branch in I choose to go to a branch in Boston, in the city, because I can teach a blazer class full of kids who would never have seen the movie Batman Forever if I hadn't taken them there. And to me, that is what being Mormon is about. That's what my religion is about, and I would rather do that. So that's the way that I've solved this problem about being active in the church. You go to a branch because they don't, as long as you're willing to teach blazers, they're not going to ask you if you believe that the prophets meet with Jesus every Thursday. The other part of the double task that I see before me is finding ways to remake the independent Mormon sector to fit my needs. I've received so much support from so many people who are part of the first generations of independent Mormonism. People I consider mentors and colleagues and friends who took the time to show interest in me. And like Scott said, there's probably no way I would be involved in institutional Mormonism if it weren't for forums and outlets like the symposium and the magazine. In a famous talk by B.H. Roberts, in a quote that many people recognize, he talks about young disciples of Mormonism needing to remake the church in their own image. And I'm going to read that quote, but I'm going to change it to be about the independent Mormon sector. To me, it's what people of our generation are going to need to do. I'm changing his words, and basically wherever he says Mormonism, I'm going to insert the independent Mormon sector or Sunstone or something. The independent Mormon sector calls for thoughtful disciples who will not be content with merely repeating some of the ways that we have talked about independent Mormonism, but will develop these ways and enlarge them by that development. The disciples of independent Mormonism, growing discontented with the necessarily primitive methods which have hitherto prevailed in sustaining these symposia, will yet take profounder and broader views of the great doctrines committed to the church, and departing from mere repetition will cast them in new formulas, and I should have inserted, will reshape these symposia and forums in new ways, cooperating in the works of the Spirit, until they help to give these forums a more forceful expression and carry them beyond earlier and creeder's developments. That's part of what I see as my mission in the next 20 years of my life. And maybe I have to take a 5-year vacation before I have enough energy to embark on that, but that is something that I feel committed to do. If I had a wish list of what I could bring to symposium to Sunstone or the independent Mormon sector in the next 20 years, probably to Sunstone in particular, since that's what the panel is about. Number one, I would get Sunstone online. I would, even if it's only a homepage and an address for letters. And if anyone out there wants to design a homepage for Sunstone, I'm sure and is willing to volunteer that energy, I'm sure it would be more than welcome. That way, Sunstone can become made available and have access to people who don't even live close to regional symposia or who may not even know it exists. I think that the other night someone told me that a third to a half of the crowd stood up when they asked how many people were here for the first time, and a lot of that was due to their involvement on the internet. I want to ask how many people in here, first of all, are under the age of 33, and I'm just making facile divisions. Okay, so I don't think that we can necessarily say that younger people aren't coming to the symposia. That's a lot of people out there. How many of those are here for the first time? How many people altogether are here for the first time? That's not a bad percentage, especially for my two beautiful friends who are sitting in the back, who I haven't seen in years. I love you guys. I'll come hug you afterwards. You guys made me lose my train of thought. One reason I think this is so important is because a lot of people are finding the internet an appealing option to coming to the symposium. One person told me that he used to go to the symposium to know that there were other Mormons like him. And now he doesn't need to do that because he has them in his email inbox every day. I think that it's important to try to wed these forums together, such as the panel later this afternoon, Postimonies from the Net, The Ward from Hell, which I'm a member of. I'm a home teacher in The Ward from Hell. And everyone go to that session. I think that it could easily, instead of contributing to the symposium and the forums, I think that it could detract from them. Another thing on my wish list is that we would have a more equal representation of women authors and women staff members and women organizers for the symposia. I wish that were more balanced. There are times in Sunstone's past where Albert was the only male in the office and everyone else who worked with him were women, but I talked to another friend about this, and she says that she thinks that until now we haven't had roughly equal percentages of women getting degrees and becoming willing to participate in these forums. And so hopefully in the future we'll see that balance out. I would like to see Sunstone become a little more focused in its agenda. Part of the problem with just being old school liberal is that you say you're an open forum, which really isn't true. Everyone has to make decisions on what you include, and I think that it might be helpful at some point to be upfront about an agenda and to say that we're interested in liberal social issues and or something like that. There's a magazine called Sojourners, which is published by fundamentalist Christians who have liberal social politics. And it's really quite an interesting magazine. They're quite active. Okay, I'm shutting up. Obviously, okay, that's the end anyway. See, there's nothing on the next page. What I was going to finish with is basically I jumped the gun and asked how many people were here because I had the suspicion looking at the audience that these five people up here aren't the only young people at this symposium. There's a hell of a lot of us out there, and there's a lot of people in other... And so I think that it's up to these people to just come out of the audience, propose sessions next year, write articles for the magazine, talk about things that are important to our generation, because there are things that are important to our generation. And once we do that, we'll make these places... better for the next 50 years. So thanks.
An hour isn't enough time for a panel discussion, especially with the kinds of individuals we have today. Before we probably have time for like one question. Before we let that one question be answered, we'd like to answer a question ourselves. Something that has been a common theme in all of the presentations is, so what the hell do we do now? You know, we've talked about it. What are we going to do? And there are no easy answers, but we want to talk about it, at least on one occasion, and then get out and do something. On the August 21st, that's a Monday, at 7:30, we're meeting at Chris and Carrie's house. And the address is up here. There's a sign-up sheet. Please come en masse. Sign up and show up, and we're going to get out into our communities. We're going to teach, we're going to talk, we're going to do humanitarian service, and we'll make a difference. So, a question. Yes? Make it good.
With none of us believe that there is one answer,
I think it was Brian that said he never had a vision. But I think each of us have a responsibility to have our own visions, a vision of Sunstone, where it's going. I'd like to see whatever it takes to... to me, 10,000 readership of Sunstone isn't a lot, and I think there's a lot of people out there that deserve to read Sunstone, and what will it take to get 100,000 readership of Sunstone? That, to me, I think that a lot of people deserve it, even though we've got a big influence saying, oh, stay away from Sunstone, but there we go. Yeah, is there any other end? What can we open the forum a little more, or how can we broaden, or not broaden it, but...
Carrie and I got our subscription as a wedding gift from Albert, so get married.
That does it. Come on up and talk for a minute. I think there's another session in this room, so we'll make it quick and move out.